A written transcript of this episode is provided by Starburst. For more information, you can see the show notes.
Welcome to Data Mesh Radio with your host, Scott Herleman, sponsored by Starburst. Starburst is a single platform to help you activate all your data, no matter where it lives. Check out our new Data Products for Dummies ebook to learn more about how your organization can utilize data products. To download your free copy, head on over to starburst.io.
Data Mesh Radio is provided as a free community resource by Data Mesh Understanding. It is produced and hosted by me, Scott Herleman. I started this podcast as a place for practitioners to get useful information about Data Mesh, and we're at over 200 episodes. I've now left DataStax, thanks for all their help in founding things, but I've left to start Data Mesh Understanding, which is also helping practitioners to get to the information needed to do Data Mesh well. We have free implementer introduction and roundtable programs, in addition to the more advanced yet affordable offerings. So please do get in touch if you're looking for more information on how to approach Data Mesh. Just check datameshunderstanding.com for more info. There's also a helpful organization of past Data Mesh Radio episodes there if you want to dig into specific topics rather than digging through 200 different episodes. So with that, let's hit the funky intro music and listen to what you'll hear about in this interview episode. Empowering development with actionable data. Bottom line up front, what are you going to hear about and learn about in this episode? I interviewed Carol Assis, who's a data analyst and data product manager, and Eduardo Santos, who's a professor and consultant, both at ThoughtWorks. To be clear, they were only representing their own views on the episode. From here forward, I will be combining both Carol and Eduardo's views into one rather than trying to specifically call out who said which part. So here are some key takeaways or thoughts from Eduardo and Carol's point of view. Number one, at the end of the day, the team that produces the data will get the most use out of it 9 times out of 10. Getting teams used to developing with data in mind isn't just useful for the rest of the organization, it's useful for maximizing their own team's success. Number two, continuous integration is a crucial concept in general for learning how to automate and focus on delivering more, which leads to focusing on value. Read the book. Again, that's in the show notes. There's a link to that. Number three, a potentially controversial one, Data Mesh is an extension of the continuous integration book or concept because of the focus on delivering value quickly and building to scale reliably. I'm not 100% sure I agree that it's just an extension of that, but I do think, Jamak has taken a lot from continuous integration, continuous delivery, or CICD. Number four, there are many methodologies for understanding value delivery in software. We just have to adapt them better to data. Don't reinvent the wheel. Everybody out there, stop reinventing wheels to try and do the same things we've learned in data. Number five, far more organizations need to think about the goals of their products and then how to measure success against those goals at product inception. Design data into your products from the start. Number six, data people often make the data overly complicated for non-data people to grasp. What does the data tell us and what are some simple numbers? Then people can feel like they understand without going deep into stochastic modeling or something like that. Number seven, relatedly, engage data consumers' curiosity, including the producers that will consume their own data. Try to meet them where they are and get them to engage with data more. Lower the perceived bar to leveraging data. Number eight, application development teams need convincing that working with data is, one, essential to understand their own success to further improve their products, and two, that it's much easier than it has been historically. There's a lot of scar tissue out there around working with data. Number nine, a potential good hook to get people to build their applications with data in mind is being able to show metrics and measure success from day one. The business side can get a better idea and are more likely to engage. It gives a communication bridge between developers and the business people. Number 10, having data early in the application development cycle means you have more proof points for making your decisions, assuming you side with the data, of course. That makes it easier to justify decisions instead of people making guesses. You can say, you know, this is where we're headed because this is where the early data is telling us we should go. Number 11, measuring what matters is a crucial concept for the entire team to adopt. It will help people understand what data they need and why. Number 12, pressing people on what to measure and then how to measure it crystallizes what bets they are making. How are they expecting users to interact with their applications? Number 13, for many business people, you may need someone playing the data translator role, translating data to business and business to data. Most organizations, their data literacy is still quite low. And again, you need to lower the bar to business people leveraging data. Number 14, potentially controversial, you don't need to start with data products. Yes, data products are great, but teaching your team that data matters is groundwork to head in the direction of something more scalable. A spreadsheet is a fine place to start. Focus on delivering insights that deliver value, then work towards the productized aspects. Now, Scott, note here, I think it's really important to really think about what can your company do now? How can they deliver value? How can they accelerate what they're doing with data rather than saying, I need to be this perfect paragon of data or data mesh or whatever? How do you get moving forward and be okay with not being perfect from the start? I think it's really important. Finally, number 15, ask people what action they will take once they have the data. Get them in the mindset that data drives action, and data that won't drive action isn't where they should even focus.
Okay, enough of just me. Let's hear from our awesome guest in this interview episode. Okay, very, very excited. I've got Carol Assis here, who is the data analyst slash data product manager. And I've got Eduardo Santos here, who is a professor as well as kind of a consultant in across a lot of different things, but a lot of data architecture and things like that. And they're both with ThoughtWorks, obviously. Had a lot of ThoughtWorkers on, but very excited to be talking about this somewhat from a data perspective, but also somewhat from a software engineering perspective and talking with developers and helping them understand what are we actually trying to do with data, not just data mesh, but around actually setting ourselves up to be successful with data. So we're going to talk about how we need to change the way that we build digital products to actually be data driven from the start, right? That data is embedded into what we're building and why, and that we think about our data sourcing strategy and how we can set up our products to evolve with understanding, but also not just measure what we can from what we've got, but create what we need. And then we'll talk about, like, how do we actually have these conversations with developers? How do we get them to understand what we're trying to accomplish and why, as well as, you know, teaching them to own data, this whole concept of valued versus valuable. And Eduardo hates the phrasing of delighting our users. So, like,
oh my God.
How do we think about actually having these conversations and, like, kind of lean into that, where if we're just telling developers constantly, we need to delight our users with data, you know, what is that? That's not necessarily what we want to be doing. So, like, having the real kind of human aspect to it instead of pretending like we're talking to machines or writing a thought piece blog post. So, but before we jump into that, Carol, if you don't mind, if you could give people a bit of an introduction to yourself, and then Eduardo will ask you to do the same.
Hey, nice talking to you, Scott. Yeah, I'm an economist, and I also had my master's in economics. I worked for a long time with, evaluating public policies. So it was really hard from the academia part to collect the data to plan all the implementation of that in schools and public sector. So now that I work with technology and we have all this amount of data available and resources to analyze that, I'm just amazed and trying to connect the dots between data, science, technology, product, and in business to bring value to this. So I work now, as you said, as a data product manager, because I think this is the part in which we lack of people doing this job. So I didn't know the concept before reading the book, the Data Mesh book, but I was already doing that role. And when I read that, I was like, okay, yeah, there are other people living the same stuff that I'm doing. So this is really something new for the industry as all around the world. So we are fine. And now I just try to connect these points and to delight users using all the data we have available in the tech companies.
Eduardo, this is a walking meme. I'm going to create a business card. My name is Eduardo, and I'm delighting users with data. That's if I had a business card, that would be it. Okay. So jokes apart, my name is Eduardo. I'm working as a consultant at ThoughtWorks at this moment. I believe the best description for myself is that I'm old. I have been done a lot of things since I started working with data in 2006, I guess. And we didn't call it work with data. We just call it work it. We didn't have this kind of description in the jobs. At the time, the companies have different needs. They have like these whole different legacy systems and they want to extract value out of it. And I have been working a lot of engineering managers as well, have been working as developers also. And there was one book that changed my life because it reflected everything I have been experienced. And that's the Continuous Integration book. It seems like a very, general thing. But at that moment, I could realize that if you automate things and you focus on the value, you can deliver much more. And was really a game changer at the time. And ever since, I have been studying ThoughtWorks because, all those concepts have been erupting from people who work in here. And by the time I read Data Mesh, I had the same feeling. Okay, this is exactly what I have been seeing in my whole life. Somebody wrote it. So I see Data Mesh as an extension of the Continuous Integration book because they have about the same concepts. I mean, focus on the important things, deliver value quickly, fastly, and try to make everybody on the company understand they have a contribution for it. So I believe Data Mesh is a game changer. As I believe, Scott, we are going to the, second phase in Data Mesh that we are seeing what's the value companies got out of it. And I believe in the last year or so, this has been the focus of my career.
Yeah, it's funny. I bring up the song Killing Me Softly a lot. I like it from the Fugees version. The original is okay, but I really like the Fugees version. But when Jamak talked about Data Mesh, a lot of people said, the song is Killing Me Softly, telling my whole life with his words, singing my story with his song or something like that. And that's the way I feel like Jamak actually, when people read the blog posts and the book and they're like, okay, somebody is actually seeing these pains. And Eduardo, exactly what you're talking about as well of the continuous integration, Jamak on her episodes of Jamak's Corner on this podcast, we talk about that automation need and the dependency management and that we want to create a framework where people can deliver on what is valuable instead of managing the things that aren't valuable to manage. So how do we automate those things that aren't valuable to manage? And I think this plays well into what we're planning to talk about as well, of how do we work with developers to understand that these data requests that come in later, or these requests to understand like what's actually going on with this, why aren't we planning ahead? Why aren't we setting ourselves up to actually think about what do we need to do so that we can figure out how we make our product better, how we measure, you know, its success and what's going well, what's not going well, instead of kind of only going out and talking to people, which I do think that those product managers that don't talk to users are not product managers. You know, it's that thing of, you know, if you're not delivering something that people use, and if you're not delivering something that creates value, is it even a product? And so going out there and talking to those people is crucial to that. But the data is also incredibly crucial. You can't have one without the other. So how, like, let's talk a little bit about the theory of what you think digital products need to become, and then we could talk about how they actually need for that to happen. Like, what do we need to do? What do we need to start doing from the start to make it so that we can test, are things working? Not just, is this product successful, but what aspects are successful? Where should we double down? What's not working? Like, how do you think about having those conversations about building those products? So, Eduardo, I know that this is your super, super passion point. So maybe we'll start with you, and then we'll ask Carol to add some more comments.
Thank you, Scott. Actually, it's my passion anyway, because you see, we have been creating in the last years a lot of methodologies to understand what value means and to discover products. We have product discovery, we have lean inception, we have MVP concept from lean startup. There's a lot of things that we can do to manage and create a value hypothesis for a product. And that's okay, because these methodologies actually work. We have a very specific and very well done definition of a value for a digital product. And why are we focusing on digital products? Because with digital products, and we are going to get there, it's much easier to gather data. Because if you have a physical product, we have to talk to the people, and it's a little bit more complicated, but not for digital products. They are online. We can get any information we want about these products. So what happens then? They start to bring this hypothesis, they create this value proposition, they develop the MVP, and they forget to answer a very simple question. Did it work? Did they manage to get the value we have been proposing from the start? Why that happens? Because data is usually out of the value proposition. Because, I mean, I want to be the biggest browser. Let's bring all the memes here. I want to be the biggest browser in the world, right? That's the famous Google Chrome objective. I want to be the most used browser in the world. Okay, how much is most used browser? 1 million users, 10 million users, 100 million users, right? It should be easy as having a number to describe if you have been successful or not, if you are far or if you are close to your destination. And digital products don't do that. They don't actually know how to answer that very simple question. Did you get that? Are we close? And it's funny because the hypothesis is there, but when we deliver the product to the customers, we have no practical ways to collect that information. And I believe that's a very pain point we should address here.
Yeah, and I think, Carol, I want to get to your thoughts on it in a second, but I think a good point of that is like the inception of Twitter. Twitter was supposed to be about trucking, right? The original company was about like trucking, and they were doing like messaging system for people that were actually doing like driving trucks and like communicating back and forth. And then they started to see that this use case started to emerge. And so they had people that were watching, but if they had the data, they would have been able to pivot much faster. You know, that it was very easy for them to have not seen that. And where are the things that are catching on? So, but yeah, Carol, I'd love to hear kind of how you're thinking about this space, especially, you know, Eduardo, you come a little bit more from the software side. So you're kind of banging your head against the wall of going, why aren't these software people doing this? And then, yeah, Carol, you're coming from the data side and having actually especially when you're talking about some of the economic data and getting that to actually be generated correctly and cleanly and well, and all of that is impossibly difficult. So I know you know some of the challenges, but like, how are you thinking, how are you seeing where digital products are really lacking, and what are the low-hanging fruit versus the nice-to-haves or the expensive-to-have, but we should have, but like, let's start with some very base-level things. Like, what are you thinking when you hear about that?
Okay, so I think we have some developers and business people, they are usually very curious, and mostly the developers, they are also passionate about tech and what they are doing. They just like play on their free time, play video games, and that excites them. And they are very, very logical people. So this helps us to build this connection with them. Talking about a Brazilian scenario, we have today a very difficult, a hard problem in which people don't really learn math in schools. Their grades are really bad in middle school and high school, and then it chips up until university. So some people tend to think math is hard, and they tend to think that once they didn't learn that when they were a kid, they won't be able to get along with maths and statistics after later in life. So the first thing we have to do when talking to these people is just trying to destroy that wall, to say, hey, that's okay. When you pay your bills, when you know how much you earn and how much you have to pay, and you do that math, it's already math. You already have this within you. Let's do this together and build this bridge that will help you to connect what you are doing and what you're thinking, what you are passionate about, and how you can measure this. Because once you give, I mean, I've been working, delivering some MVP, some data products MVPs to these developers. And once they have the first MVP with some data on it, they're like super excited. They're like, oh my God, look what the tagging we have implemented in this app. It brings so much value. It's so nice to observe how users are dealing with this. Can you give me more data? Can you bring me more insights? So I think it's something that is within all of us, this curiosity that we have about data and user behavior. So we have to use this to bring us together and to show that it's possible, to make it simpler, like not using the hype words that we have on all data science and data mesh. No, it's not about data mesh. It's not about data science. Let's do some simple maths here. Let's just percentage or growth rate, something like that. So I think this is where we can start. And it's amazing how people respond well to that. They are really into data analysis after that.
Yeah, I think that lowering that cognitive bar, that like you said, it's kind of a fear. It's a fearful thing if people are afraid of this, because it's like, oh, I didn't do that well. Like me personally, I'm bad at statistics. Like I just am. And so like all other maths, I'm pretty good at, you know, I took calculus and linear algebra in college for fun. You know, just I enjoy maths, but I hate statistics. And so, yeah, it is one of those things of like, is this that frightening? And it's like, no, like if you set yourself up, you kind of have to understand what you're doing, but at the same point, you don't have to do these complex calculations by hand. You just set it up to feed into the computer systems well, and it'll help you understand that. But I think I like that beginning of the conversation, but I think one of the challenges we have as data people is that we're brought into the conversation late, right? We're brought in when we're saying, you know, Eduardo, when you're saying, okay, was this successful? Well, why haven't we built this from the beginning to say this, like, how are we measuring success? So how are you seeing that actually work? Like, is it difficult? Are you still seeing it as a big challenge that data people have to get in at the project inception? Or how early do you have to get to people? And how do you get them to prioritize creating the right data? Because it isn't one of their OKRs. It isn't one of the KPIs around the product at the start. It becomes that, you know, it becomes this thing that's important later on, but it's not necessarily at the start. So how do you think about creating that space for them to do the work to do, you know, so that it isn't shoehorning back and changing a lot of what they're doing later in the life cycle of the digital product?
Great. That's a very good question, Scott. I believe that after that, Carol has a practical example where we can explore a little bit more of it. But let's go back to the history, understand what happens that we got to the situation, right? At the beginning, the data is a very expert-based system. So we have relational database systems, and they are critical for the company. The people who manage this data need to be very expert on that kind of systems. And if you get back many years, you are going to get to the mainframes. You need to know COBOL to extract reports with data. So if data has always been a niche inside technology, the knowledge has to be very, very, very specific so you can deal with the many aspects of the data. Also, in the 80s and the 90s, we have been doing a big effort to concentrate the data and what we have been calling data lakes, because it usually spread in different systems. So giving credit to the programmers, it wasn't an easy task to get the data they needed to prove the systems work. And that's where I believe data mesh brings a very good revolution to this kind of scenario. Because when we have the technology, we have also to understand that talking about data mesh 15 years ago would be much more difficult because it didn't have decentralized platforms and tools to self-service that we have today. But right now, we are at the point, if you go to any cloud provider, Google, Azure, AWS, they're going to give you a lot of tools that you can use to manage data. So the entry point is much smoother than when I started to work with data. I have to learn business objects. I had to learn 6 or 7 different SQL languages just to manage the data. And that's not the reality anymore. So me and Carol, we are working for a big customer and the airline business. Okay, so let's say it like this. And let's say you have like a mechanical engineer. This guy is to the fluid mechanics, okay? He knows advanced math. This is the kind of math. I studied physics, and I don't know if I can manage the same math these guys can, okay? So it's complex math. Don't you think they can learn basic SQL? Let's see. So as we talk data-driven, we also have to understand the tools now are much simpler to deal with data. So the complexity we had like 15 years ago, it's smaller at this moment. Of course, we have platform challenges. We can talk in the future near that. Having said all of that, what can I say? What data mesh brings to the game is that data is part of the team. You know somebody who knows, I don't know, mobile development. You know somebody who knows backend development. You need that to develop the product. Now, you need to have somebody who knows data as well, because that will enable you to extract the value you need to prove you were right from the beginning. It's basic scientific process, I know, because when you establish a hypothesis, you have to prove yourself you're right. To do that, you need to have data to support your hypothesis. So it's the same. It's changing the mind of the entire team right from the beginning. Okay, for every step we take in one direction, I need to know what the data will make me be sure if I'm on the right direction for every step. And that's something that you get inside in the team. And there are some very practical examples you can have on that matter.
Well, and Carol, I'd love to hear especially about how do you have this conversation with the team, right? Because exactly what you said of what are we trying to accomplish? You said earlier, I think Eduardo is that we're getting much better at delivering value via digital products. Like, we know how to do that, but do we know how to prove it? And do we know how to figure out what are the specifics of that? And as you said, like, how much of this is convincing the team they need to do this versus convincing the people that are creating the KPIs and the OKRs for the team, right? Maybe the team is bought in that they need to do this, or maybe they're not. Like, I'd love to hear kind of what you're seeing out there, because this is an integral part to delivering value, because you need to understand, are we actually delivering value? So I'd love to hear, Carol, especially like from the specifics of what you're actually seeing from that. What can somebody take away from this? Do I have to intersect with this team before they are even formed? Do I have, like, when do I start to do that? Or is it that thing of the best place to start this was back then, but the second best place is now? Because, you know, we at least could get going on that.
Yeah, exactly. It's been really hard to even sell projects that include data people. So what ThoughtWorks has been trying to do is like, okay, you don't need, this is like our gift to you. You're taking someone, some data person with you to your project. And then when you see value to what this person is doing, then, okay, we start to plan how to include the person and the payment. But because even our tech leads, I've been working with a really great tech lead recently, and he had never worked with anyone from data. And after 8 months building an app from scratch, he was like, wow, I have never been business people so connect what we are doing with the app, because we have all this data. I mean, we had all the dashboards and analysis in real time, even before the app was launched. So people were really excited to show other people in the company that they had all that amount of data, and that was brought to them like in ways they could understand. So look at this screen, this and this and these are being clicked, or this is not this. I see how different people behavior are here from there. So I think we have this part of educational process to try to bring to our tech leads and to our project managers. So how great the impact is, and what are the benefits we can get once we have someone that can connect data, business, tech, and development? Because these are the people that will empower you to do your job. So I've been doing that by start working with the company and trying to do all the roles that a data person can do. So sometimes I'm doing the architecture, drawing and planning, sometimes planning the tagging strategy and helping developers implementing that, and then analyzing the data, ingesting the data. But this is, for me, the MVP of a data product. We have to give people this first incentive that they need to see how valuable that is, and to encourage them to bring more data people to their squads. So in this project that, as I said, we started 8 months ago, I was with the team from the beginning, and I joined the Leanception process, and I was with them all along, all the time. And it was really nice to perceive that they had no idea how that data person would work with them. And then after structuring this process, that we have a UX chapter, we also have a data chapter. And once the UX chapter develops the screens and draws the screens, then the data person aligned with the developers, we'll try to find the best way to tag all that screens. And after that, after refining with them, that can go with the sprint and start can go on the backlog and they can prioritize that. But it's part of the process of developing the product. I work really close to the squads and with the developers, thinking exactly what we want to measure and why. And of course, it would be amazing to have data before the inception, so we could do our inception process based on data. But the reality is that it's really hard. Even during the discovery, sometimes you don't have enough people or time to bring all the data we'd like to have. But once you are like that annoying person in the room saying, hey, do we have data to back up that decision? How are you making that decision? Is it based on feeling? Is someone that has really good knowledge on this business? And then people start to feel really uncomfortable because they see that it would be possible to have better answers for that and they don't have enough data. And once you generate that inside people, they start, okay, can you please give me that data and that data and that data? They start, oh, okay, now we need more people when we start to make this process bigger and better for everyone.
Well, I think it's interesting because this could be what the data people could go to execs with of, hey, do you want to understand what's actually going on in real time, you know, of as you're developing this, as it's intersecting with actual potential users and clients and or whatever customers, because what you were talking about was they're so much more closely aligned with the business where there isn't this huge communication gap that data can help you bridge that communication gap of what were we expecting and what's actually happening, and that it's not an ad hoc request. It's not, hey, you know, what about this or what about this? If you think about it ahead of time, you've set yourself up to have a much more deep conversation, right? It's kind of like, I think about this teenagers dating versus people that are more in their late 20s, 30s, 40s kind of timeline. Of, you know, are you just kind of flying by the seat of your pants? Are you just trying to, you know, like just reacting to the person? Or are you trying to build a deeper relationship and a deeper understanding so that you can build something together? You know, I think about this of like building a life with somebody rather than just trying to go on dates. And it's kind of the same thing that you have to think about when it comes to applications and products and building these things of, do we want to have something where we actually understand each other, or we're just kind of tolerating each other and that kind of thing? The analogy gets a little bit strange, but at the same point.
No, I know, but I understand. Let me just add to that, Scott. I want to support the professor meme people in Totros talk about me. I want to bring to the discussion two books that are very well known for the people who work with products in general. It's the famous OKR book, Measuring What Matters, and also the Marty Kagan dual book, Inspired and Empowered, right? So what can those books bring to the discussion? What does it mean, measure what matters? It's a very simple thing. Why do I need this data? How can this information be valuable to the business? And when you answer that question, the developers are like, oh, that's why I'm doing this screen, because this screen is going to move the pointer to another direction. It's going to change the results for that. And there's a very interesting thing that Martin Kagan highlights, and it's very important that we bring to the discussion, is that there are some companies where you have business side and you have technology side. They are separated. And the insights that Marty Kagan bring about tech companies is that this is a bad idea because business people without technology knowledge it can strange technology knowledge. Anyway, the people who don't know about tech actually don't know what the technology can do. And if you have somebody with technical knowledge and understanding the value about the work, that's the win-win situation, because you're going to develop some feature that's actually going to move the company in the direction they wanted. And that's, I believe, how data people can work on that matter.
Yeah. And I like to do this simple question, as Edu said, but it's really powerful when we are planning the tagging that is going to be developed in the next sprint. And I just ask the product owner and the business analyst, like, okay, so let me help you. What do you want to measure here? What is important in this screen? What is the behavior expected when the user is in here? Do you want him to click in here? Or what is your goal? And then people are like, no, for me, it doesn't matter if it clicks in here. I just want them to understand what I'm trying to teach. And then, okay, so we don't need to measure if the person is clicking here. We need to have some interactive button where the person says, yeah, this was insightful. No, this was not. So you start to feed the UX development and the product development by doing the right questions to the people. So I've been saying that my biggest challenge has been teaching business analysts and product owners to understand what questions can data answer. So teach them how to make that questions. And then, okay, you can be supported by data if you ask this kind of questions. This is something you should be doing. You should be analyzing. So for a while, I was doing this job by myself and trying to educate and create that culture among all the squads. But once they realized that was something that was not that complicated and that they could move faster if they implemented by themselves, they're like, okay, so now we have a data champion that is a developer that will be responsible for creating the tags and validating them with the team. And we will be doing our analysis by ourselves. And then Carol will be here supporting us to understand if it's coherent between all the squads and all the strategy we have, if there's something that data could benefit, data scientists could benefit if we add some parameter to indicate something specific. But this move to enabling them, to empowering them to being responsible and capable of implementing their own tags because they want to measure their hypotheses and to validate them. This is so nice to see in practice. You say, okay, I think my job is done in here. They can walk by themselves. It's really nice.
I think there's a lot of different ways that I can follow up on that, but I think it's really interesting to ask about that question of, and you know, we were planning on talking about teaching people data ownership, about data for yourself versus data for others. And like, you know, a little bit of what you were talking about was the kind of five whys, you know, the little five-year-old thing of like, what are you trying to do? Why? Why? Like, why are you adding? Well, you know, when you're cooking, it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? And it's like, oh, well, there's a very specific purpose. Or what are you trying to achieve? And you don't just say, I'm trying to make a tasty meal, or you can, but it's like, you know, not why. Why are you trying to do that? Because then people will like it. Why? Because it tastes good, you know, but like, why are you doing this thing that will change the tasty meal? Why are you setting yourself up for this? So I'd love to understand how you're having that conversation with people so that they can probably start with, what do you want to answer for yourself? And then we think about, you know, that data product manager. It's not that the data product is only internal, it's external, right? Like that's the whole thing of, Jamak has kind of talked about this of, you probably don't really need a data product if your only consumer is inside the domain, because it doesn't need to be that stable. Things can change because you know you're the one that's changing the upstream that's going to impact it. So you know what you need from it. And so, and that's also one of the reasons why some companies are forcing all domains to consume data only from their own data products. So then they have to create very high quality data products because if that's where they're consuming from, and then they're going to create things that are more stable and all that stuff. But like, how do you think about that conversation with them about not what do I want to know about this, but what are other people going to want to know? Like, what data should you be generating for the rest of the organization? What's going to be valuable for them when people haven't thought about what data do I need? Now you're trying to get them to figure out what data other people need, and not just like, what data do you have that I can give you, but what should I be generating for you, or what could I be generating? Like, how do you think about starting that conversation and then teaching them what ownership actually means? A lot of times the developers know what ownership means when it comes to product, but not when it comes to data, because data is far more longer lived than a lot of aspects of products, even if the product is a very long lived product. But like, you know, people are talking about, oh, I found this data that's 3 years old and we're using it. You know, somebody told me that there was, a very, very, very important, like is in tens of billions of dollars product was powered because some data that somebody had put together and then hadn't touched for 6 months. And then the team that was building this product was like, oh, this is the best data we can find in the company. So they built this insanely important, very crucial to a very large company product off of data that wasn't really even owned because it was the best thing there. So like, how do we think about teaching people about those Pandora's boxes of data, if this data, you know, needs to be clean and all of that, but without making it terrifying of, well, then I don't want to create any data because then it creates this huge incremental worry on my end. So I know that's a very deep and complex question, but like, how do you think about starting to have that conversation with?
You want to start with that, Carol? And I can compliment me?
You can go.
Okay. So let's talk about the organization complexity, right? We are living, Scott, we are the meme guys today, okay? So let's talk about the meme of the year, artificial intelligence, okay? Everybody wants that. Do you want that? Where do I buy? Is it the supermarket? Can I deliver? So everybody wants some artificial intelligence, right? It's in the year. What some people forget about it is that it's based on data as well, okay? There is no artificial intelligence without data to support it. And sometimes, actually 99% of the times, I talk to the customers and ask, why do you need that? They don't know why. They don't even understand what it does. So I believe most companies are focusing on the left side of maturity of data, that's artificial intelligence and optimization. That's the most mature things a company can do. And they forget about the basics. Most of the problems can be solved with good reports, some dashboards that people can start to query on that. And what I try to talk about, usually when I'm involved in a project, I have this more holistic view and inside the architecture and organization. And where should I start? So let's see. Let's try to answer questions about your business. So how are the sales going on? Which products are supporting the sales? How is the connection between the developer's work and the company results? And they cannot answer those basic questions. So it's sometimes going backwards. Okay, forget about artificial intelligence. Let's get back a little bit and try to answer some basic questions. And that has some kind of magic in people. Because when a developer gets to work and they know that feature they're developing is going to move something in the company, it's transformative. They get much more excited. They work better. they have better results because they know it's a practical result they can measure by the end of the sprint. Sometimes it's something, I'm going to change the button from the left to right, and that's going to make the conversions change from 0.5 to 0.6, and sometimes it's $1 million company. To give you a practical example of that, I used to work in the hotel reservation business, right? And this is one of the main very areas I have been working with. Most people don't know, but this is a business that has almost the same fares on every provider. If you take from the equation, the big ones, like, I don't want to say the names, but the big ones, you all know they are. Everybody has the same price for the hotel room. So what are the, you know, hotel search tools for? Because sometimes within the same hotels, the providers play with fares. I'm going to make like €5 with the reservation, and the other one's going to make like €10. Okay, €5 perhaps is not much money, but I get with the volume. So I'm playing with these numbers in volume of sales and all those things. The thing is, there is an embedding cost on this kind of reservation. That's the administrative work and the risk of the business sometimes. And if you play $1 up or down, you can be losing money even if your system says you're making profit, because most of the costs are not clear for the people who are making this reservation. Why I'm saying that? Because I have seen a company go bankrupt in a weekend because of that. Because they have this guy that was the main developer, and he was the only person with access to the database to block hotel rooms or hotel providers. And he went for vacation in a weekend where there was no phone. So in the weekend, the hotel provider went bankrupt. And what's the practical effect for that for people involved in the business? If you are a guest and you book the hotel room at the website, you are going to pay for it. And when you get to the hotel was not going to accept your reservation. Just imagine that feeling for the customer. You went on vacation, you got to the hotel, you paid for the hotel, and you have no room. So in a weekend from Friday to Monday, the company lost €1 million, something like that, because it's a high volume business. And they went bankrupt because of that. Why that happens? They didn't have a single dashboard saying how much money they're making or losing with every hotel reservation room. And they don't have a button to block the hotels or block the rooms. There could be a single... Why that? Because they didn't think of it. You know, they don't know how their business operates because they are not usually... they are not used to work with data to day-by-day decisions. And I actually, when I went to the other customer to make a new hotel system, the first feature I have been developing was the panic button. Okay, if you want to block this hotel room, just press this button and you're going to be fine. And then the company is like 10 years already in the market because of a single button. And it's this kind of decisions, you know, it's not magic. You don't need a bot to do that. You don't need to call ChatGPT or something like that. It's simple questions about why and how. And then you can transform some company's business thinking about data in the first place.
Yeah, I had something a little similar. And then, Carol, I want to get your thoughts. But I was working for a SaaS company. And for some reason, as the cost manager for all the cloud costs, and for some reason, they had me managing a downtime, because most of the reason we were taking the downtime was to, cut some costs and modernize some of what we were doing. And people were looking at me like I was crazy, because I had like a list of, 50 contingencies of if this happens, then this, if this happens, then this. And it's like, but if we haven't ever taken a downtime, so I have to manage all of these things out. Like, how do we do this? We sent out communication and nobody tested to see deliverability. They said, did you send the email? And the answer was yes. And it was like, therefore we met our obligations. And I said, okay, but did we check with our biggest customers if they got the actual alert, if they knew what was happening? And one out of our top 20 saw it. One out of 20 of our top 20 customers saw it. And then we really dug into deliverability, and like a lot of them went into spam folders and all this stuff. So then we started doing additional things to make people sure that they were alerted. But if I hadn't done that, I could have cost us, you know, it could have cost us 10 times the amount of money we were saving when we were saving multiple millions a year by doing these major cost cuts. But like, it could have really destroyed our reputation. But again, it is that like, what do we need to prevent and why? So, but Carol, I wanted to get kind of your thoughts around all of this of like, how do we get people again from understanding like data ownership and how that works and what's necessary to the company versus just kind of like, okay, I just need to create a dashboard, right? Versus like, how are you playing as part of the organization? What do other people need from you or want from you? How can you deliver incremental value beyond just the application you're developing?
Yeah. So I like the term data translator because you imagine literally people translating business to data and data to business. And the example you gave before, like, I want to, like my business goal, I want to prepare tasty meals. And then I made this dynamic with the team that my first question is like, what questions will help you to answer that, to know if your meals are tasty? And then people have to start thinking, is it too salty? Is it too spicy? Do I have, and the list goes on and on. And then question by question, you ask them, so how can we measure that? Is it too salty? Do you, because you have to drink too much water after some time you've eaten this? So, and then people will start to understand how to connect the business goals with the specific data that we are using to measure that business goal. So I think that the beauty in this profession is that you are able to address the elephant in the room. I mean, the thing that no one is talking about that you think is implied that everyone is understanding the same stuff. You, by having to translate that into data, into metrics, you're like, okay, so when you say you want tasty meals, you say that you don't want people to feel thirsty 2 hours after they're eating them. And people are like, no, not that. No, we have to figure out some way to measure that in another way. So, and then you just tell them, oh, so we have to generate the data. We have to collect that. You have to think how to measure. But for now, we just have a proxy of what a tasty meal looks like. So, and this teaches people also on how to understand data better. Because once they have the index tasty meal, they will know it's about salty salt in their meals and not, or people being thirsty and not about the how tasteful it is. So I like to do that deep dive with the people that are demanding the OKRs or the ones that set the business goal, because then they start to reflect deeply on what they really need. And I've done these dynamics with some people, and it's worth it. People get they already have the questions that I like to say that we are like therapists. You just stay there and ask questions. Okay, tell me more about this. What do you mean by tasty? Oh, okay, so. When you add spice, and yeah, it's for me, it's how it's been working. And I think it's part of the role of the data product manager or the data translator to not only talk to the team you are working with, but also with other teams from the company. Because when you have a digital product, you have the face of the company for the users or the customers. So you're about branding, marketing, copy, digital products, financial products. You have all the company kind of resumed in one app or website. It's your job to talk to all the other stakeholders and to understand what is their goal within the what you're developing within your product? How can you help them leverage their goals? So how are the goals aligned? This kind of talk is, it's not every company that's open to talk about that or that understand, because people do get very uncomfortable talking about that. But that's why we have to balance, like, start to bringing the difficult questions to the table and at the same time providing people data and insights, because they will get excited about it and want it more and get it uncomfortable by the other side. And then you just try to make this into one direction.
Well, and I think a couple of things that you said there as well that kind of aligns with and kind of actually combats with a little bit of what somebody could misunderstand what Eduardo was saying earlier of measure what matters, but also optimizing to the measurement, right? Versus the goal. You are measuring something because it's the best approximation towards the goal. You're not measuring something. You're not optimizing to a measurement because the measurement is what matters. It's that what you're trying to measure for is what matters. And so you create measurements that best approximate what matters, right? And so if somebody says, you need salty in a meal to make it tasty, then they go, oh, I'm going to make my meal of nothing but salt because that is what makes things tasty. And it's like, no, please don't do that.
Yes.
Again, that's that five-year-old understanding of, oh, salt makes things tasty. I should just do, or sugar makes things tasty. And yes, a five-year-old may want to just eat a thing of sugar for a meal. That's probably not the best thing to be doing. But yeah, I think that understanding that conversation is difficult to get them to understand. We have to set ourselves up to measure what matters, but we have to decide what matters. And if we don't decide what matters, then we can't measure anything that matters. And we have to figure out what are good ways to measure what matters, but that are good as in the return on investment sense, right? I have this problem when I talk about community stuff, of community activity. I had one thing where, you know, a couple of different quick examples, but one where somebody was like, we must know absolutely every outcome that comes from our community involvement. And it's like, then I'm spending 80% of my time measuring instead of interacting with people, when I should be spending at most 20% measuring and kind of giving you a sense and giving you some stories around it, but there isn't exact outputs because you don't know something, you don't know what built up to things. You know, the same thing happens with kind of marketing attribution and stuff like that. But I had another one where I was working on a project and we had these very, very aggressive metrics that we were supposed to hit. And we hit them, but we hit them for the sake of hitting them. And it didn't actually lead to the community engagement that we wanted. And it burnt out one of our team members that was leading this project because they were so focused on hitting the numbers that were overly aggressive numbers and that we didn't know. And that wasn't communicated to them well enough that these were overly aggressive and that we're trying to get our feet under us and figure out what matters instead of hit these numbers. But they put numbers in front of them. And so they just went after them and got and achieved those numbers and hit like everything. But the second we took our foot off the gas, everything fell apart. And that's not what community is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about creating this sustainable momentum. And so exactly, I think there's so much in there of like figuring out how to measure what matters. And I would love to have a conversation on that, but I feel like that's another hour and a half long conversation.
Yes, that's
so we're kind of heading into an hour here. So I'd love to kind of to wrap up the episode here. But is there anything that we didn't cover that you would have liked to, or any specific kind of points that you want to make around wrapping up the content of the episode?
I just want to highlight two things that I believe are very important for the audience to understand. You see, data, I believe Carol tried to bring this example. Data do not have to be complicated. You see, sometimes It's so simple as just make a spreadsheet with counting clicks number. That's it. And that's fine because you're going to have a sense if you are going to the right direction. You need data, but you don't need a complex data lake to start dealing with data. I have been saying that the tools are much more simpler today. We have much more tooling, but if you don't know tooling, start with a spreadsheet. Then you change the tooling as the complexity change and you have more needs. So everybody can understand of data. And if you don't have the necessary skills, look for expert support. I mean, if you don't know how to develop a mobile application, you're going to look for a mobile developer. The same should happen for data. If you are getting much more complicated than you can deal with, call some data people. They will help you to find the best solution. The second thing I want to highlight, it's a little bit connected to that, but it's about what matters. Now, I like the 5 whys technique. It's very simple. So why you're doing that? Why you're doing that? If you can answer 5 times the why, it's a very important thing. So let's say, I want to create an electric car. Why? Because it's going to reduce the pollution in the atmosphere. Why? Because you're dying. So you can exercise the 5 whys technique and you're going to discover if it actually matters for your product. And Carol?
Yeah. I was writing here some things I'd like to highlight. So the question that helps me a lot when talking to these people is, once you have this data, what action can you take? What will you change? What will you do after you have this information? It's not a vanity metric. You want this data because of a reason. And what is that? What's your next step? We never stop in the data. The data will help you to achieve your next goal. And this is super important. And when we said in the beginning that we are changing from digital products to data, digital data products, something like that, I think the idea is not to change, but to add. We are just in the next step of this evolutionary process of development of digital products. So for me, as I said in the beginning, since I came from the research area that is much more complex to obtain a lot of data from societies and public schools and stuff, having this amount of data, that we have available for testing stuff, this is so amazing. This is a kind of magical. It's so nice to have the opportunity to work with all of this. So let's take advantage of this and use that in favor of our development process that is, as Edu said, like the scientific method in daily life. It's just amazing. And the last thing is that everyone can start looking to data. As Edu said again, start with an Excel. Whatever you can do to measure what you have. It doesn't matter if you are a big tech company or a bakery. Everyone can transform their data lives into analytics, into data, and take advantage of observing patterns. So, and by my experience, it's really impactful how people feel once they have access to that data. It doesn't matter how simple that is. So it's not something you should be expecting that your leaders will do for you or for your company. If you can start working with that just in your routine and then show people what you're doing, it will be amazing. You'll be amazed by the results you get because people do love data.
A lot of kind of what you all have been talking about is just making this much more simple and then evolving, right? Like making this something where this, you don't have to have the perfect answer at the start. You're getting better, right? It's about progression. It's about evolution. And I think that's when we think about products, that's what products are. It's about that minimum viable. It's about getting something out there. It's about testing and learning. So, oh, and we've got a little furry guest that just showed up. So, well, but again, thank you guys so much for this. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that would love to follow up with you. Where is the best place to follow up? Anything specific? You know, most people just say kind of LinkedIn. Is there anything you want people following up about? Is that the best place?
Well, I am very active on LinkedIn and used to be on ex-Twitter as well before it dies. But you can find me on LinkedIn very easily, Eduardo San, Eduardo S-A-N. And just get in touch. I like to discuss data things over there.
Yeah. And you can find me on LinkedIn by the name Carol Assis. And I also would love to discuss data and poetry and memes.
I think we might have to start a data and poetry club, because I think Jamak's very big on poetry as well. And I think I've seen a couple other folks that have talked about that. But we'll drop links to those in the show notes to make it easy for people to follow up with you. But again, Carol, Eduardo, this has been so great. Thank you so much for spending time here with me today. And as well, thank you everyone out there for listening. I'd again like to thank my guests today, Carol Assis and Eduardo Sanchez from ThoughtWorks. You can find a link to their LinkedIns as well as four of the books they recommended in the show notes as per usual. Thank you. Hopefully that interview episode was really useful for you. Please do consider getting in touch with guests from the show, from these episodes. Most have said they'd really love people to reach out to them. And please, as well, if you've got a minute, rate and review the podcast somewhere. It really is honestly super helpful for other people looking into kind of data podcasts to kind of get this in front of them. Data Mesh Radio is again provided as a free community resource by Data Mesh Understanding. It's produced and hosted by me, Scott Herleman. In April of 2023, I left DataStax, who were wonderful in getting the Data Mesh community stuff started. So give them a shout for streaming and real-time AI needs. But I left to start my own industry analyst kind of information as a service firm. Our offerings are affordable and you can do them on a one-off or a month-to-month basis. You know, read kind of, throw it on the credit card. Don't worry about like going through purchasing and things like that. The services include lots of practitioner roundtables, you know, one-on-one data mesh kind of planning or feedback sessions and tailored introductions to other data mesh practitioners that are focused around your topics of interest. You know, what are you actually running into challenges with? We also have some free programs around introductions and roundtables that people can kind of check out as well. Check the show notes or just go to datameshunderstanding.com for more info or helpful resources. As always, if you have suggestions for guests or topics, please do get in touch as well and have a wonderful rest of your day. Now let's hear that funky outro music.